Only the army remained outside the control of the Nazis, and Hitler was quite concerned about this. It was by the end of 1933, the German army was the only institution that remained in German society that still had the capability of undoing this legal revolution that the Nazis had pulled off. The army was concerned because of the great power of the SA, these stormtroopers, which were brown-uniformed bully boys on the street. The German army, as you'll recall by the Treaty of Versailles, was restricted to 100,000 troops. The SA numbered about 500,000. The army's concern, the high command of the army, still dominated by the old Prussian conservatives, had been concerned that the army would simply be swallowed up by the SA. And Ernst Röhm, the head of the SA, had certainly done a lot of talking about this, that now it was time for the SA to become a people's army. Hitler, in early 1934, made an extremely important and telling decision. The SA had been essential in the Nazi campaigns of the late Weimar Republic. The SA had been essential during this process of Gleichschaltung. They had been the ones out on the streets bullying. They had been the ones out coercing voters, burning down the union halls, arresting union leaders, and so on. But now the regime found itself in power. It didn't need this kind of ongoing revolution. What Hitler wanted for his larger purposes, he needed industry and he needed the army. As a consequence, in early 1934, Hitler made a secret deal with the army leadership, and on June 30th, 1934, he purged the SA leadership. He arrested the top leaders of the SA, executing SA leader Ernst Röhm as a payoff to the army. It was seen by the army as that Hitler had made a choice. Instead of his own truest of the true, his old guard in the SA, Röhm had been with Hitler from the beginning. He had chosen the army. What does that tell us about National Socialist plans? We'll certainly have a chance to follow the trajectory of that, of Hitler's desires in this regard. Then on August 2nd, 1934, just shortly after the so-called Röhm putsch, Hitler maintained that Röhm was going to overthrow the government, and that's why this purge was necessary. President Hindenburg died. He was, without question, the most respected man, the most venerated man in German political culture. He had stood above the great political phrase of the day. He was a hero of the Great War. And on August 2nd, 1934, he passed away. Hitler was delighted that he had finally gone, the old man had finally gone to his reward, because in addition to the army, Hitler always worried, well, what would happen if Hindenburg, who didn't like him, who was always ambivalent about the Nazis, in a moment of lucidity, whether Hindenburg might say, this is too much, I dismiss the chancellor and I want new elections. So Hindenburg's death provided Hitler with the opportunity to merge the offices of president and chancellor, which he did, assuming both, though it was more important to him simply to be referred to as der Führer, the leader. Equally important, on Hindenburg's death, the German army swore an oath of personal loyalty to Adolf Hitler, not to the German constitution, not to the German state. The wording was to Adolf Hitler personally, and it was done on the same day as Hindenburg's death. The last institutional restraints on Nazi power had now been eliminated. The National Socialist regime was in complete control. One sees in the summer then of 1934 a remarkable transformation of German political life. A totalitarian regime had been established in Germany. It was an utterly new form of regime. We saw its outlines in the Soviet Union under Stalin. The regime's claim was to the entire person, erasing the line between public and private life. Not only what you said and did in public, but what you said at home, in your family, what you thought was now seen, could be seen as antisocial. the Soviet Union under Stalin and the Third Reich under Hitler were not traditional authoritarian regimes where compliance with the law was enough. This was a system based on ideology and terror. Ideology would provide the goals, the philosophical goals of the regime, an explanation of the past, the present, and set objectives for the future. And it justified all actions that were necessary to achieve them. No truth, no morality existed except within the framework of the ideology. This ideological truth was always threatened by enemies, the Jews for the Nazis, capitalist imperialists for the Bolsheviks. A system of relentless propaganda was created to indoctrinate the population, and the regime sought to atomize society, making the only adhesive the movement and its organizations. The role of terror, we've indicated in the regard to the Soviet Union, but in a system of terror would be established within Germany as well, run by the Gestapo, using a variety of methods to bring the population under control. These regimes were regimes that would kill you for the sake of an idea. No amount of traditional morality would be allowed to stand in the way of the great ideological truth delivered by dialectical materialism and class struggle in the Soviet Union, or as would become apparent, though had not been obvious before 1933, that it was race that was the key for the National Socialists. This would be the driving force of human history, of Nazi ideology, and the Nazis, after their consolidation of power in 1934, would begin to implement that ideology. It would begin to crystallize and become obvious to Germans and the world.